Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Well, as always, a very busy week on the political stage, nationally, internationally, everywhere. And we want to take a look at what's going on. It's always hard to catch up and keep abreast, but to help us do that today, we're lucky because Natasha Korecki, the Illinois Playbook writer for Politico.com, is with us, formerly the Sun-Times, author of a great book about Rod Blagojevich. I'm a huge fan of hers. Natasha, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
You do such great work, and Politico is so lucky to have you. That's a personal comment. Let's start internationally. Obviously, this week, a terrorist attack, Manchester, England. And I'm not turning you into a terrorism expert, but in terms of the message politically to this country, to President Trump, the really scary part about this one, I think, among other points, this was an attack where clearly the terrorists knew young people and kids would be. What warning is that sending us, if any?
You know, it's that they're really not holding back on anything, that nothing's off the table here. I mean, to do it at a, you know, Ariana Grande, who's, she has, I think, something like 100 million followers on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, she's hugely popular, you know, and this is a venue that's, you know, in England, you know, and they timed it. If it was intentional, the timing, which I'm sure, you know, if ISIS is claiming a responsibility that, you know, at a time when the president's on his first, you know, international tour, he's going through the Middle East. So it's sending some, you know, many different messages there.
You know what terrifies me is when you think about, so this suicide bomber, who the, you know, apparently British police say they know who he was. But imagine you're wearing the suicide vest. You have to consciously decide when you're going to blow yourself up and to see who's around you. And, you know, we know there's reports, you know, that an 8-year-old was killed, an 18-year-old. And just what I'm off of politics, but imagine what must be in the mind of somebody who makes the decision essentially of who he wants to take with him. It's terrifying.
Oh, it's absolutely terrifying to try to put your, you know, try to wrap your head around it at all. And, you know, a lot of these bombers, not to go into the psychology of it too much,
right,
but a lot of them have, you know, beliefs that they, that they're doing it for a greater purpose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it absolutely, it boggles the mind. And, you know, as you say, it was, I think there was all these pink balloons, you know, lifting off at the time in the arena. And, you know, it was a very happy moment. Some of them described it as, some of them met Ariana Grande that night. They're, you know, their hero. And, you know, for this to happen at the same time is just like a high and then an absolute worst nightmare at
yeah.
the same time.
As you say, president in the Middle East. And I just want to get your sense, because while he's in the Middle East, the Russia story does not go away here at home. You know, every day you have former CIA chief John Brennan testifying and this week. And so give us a sense that the political perspective on this. The president probably gets more points than he doesn't get for the Middle East trip. But at the same time, Russia continues. If you're President Trump, what are you facing? What's the dynamic in this country about him?
Well, you know, as you say, he's you know, he's off on this trip and probably so happy to be away from all of it.
Yeah, really.
It is all waiting for him. It was all waiting for him when he comes back. I mean, so here you have you know, you have Brennan testifying that, you know, gosh, I mean, one sentence after another was just this bombshell after another. You know, Russia may have successfully recruited Trump campaign aides. You know, Russia and WikiLeaks were, you know, completely in cahoots here. There's just one thing after another. And that's not even to mention all these other reports, you know, every day from out of the New York Times and the Washington Post concerning, you know, there's a White House official, according to the Washington Post, that is under scrutiny right now. And there's just so many questions for him to answer. And it's clear that it's not going away.
And of course, as it's continued, and every day there seems to be more news breaking, and the comment that the president had asked intel chiefs to dispute the FBI on the Russia probe. A lot of this stuff comes down to sort of a he said, he said. You're a journalist. I mean, you live this stuff. Do you have a sense of in the end? I mean, there's nothing that has really that Trump doesn't seem to weather, right? I mean, he famously said during the campaign, I could shoot somebody in the middle of Times Square and I wouldn't lose any support. And so far, he's proven himself right on that. Do all of these allegations, all the leaks that come out from your colleagues at the New York Times and Washington, you know, people who are journalists as you are, does it go anywhere, or is it all just a he said, and he just denies it, and so life goes on?
Oh, well, I think we have finally reached some kind of territory that is incredibly dangerous for the president. You know, what it ultimately means, you know, remains to be seen. But, you know, every day the ties to Russia deepen, and I do believe that it's going way beyond a he said. I mean, if you even look at some of the dynamics of what's happening nationally on the cable news side of things, where, you know, people are, you know, Bill O'Reilly's gone from Fox, but people are fleeing to MSNBC and CNN, and some of the theory is that they're going to Fox News, and it's just not reporting some of what's happening in Washington right now. They're trying to continue their support for Trump, and more people are falling away from it. He did just undergo some of the lowest favorability ratings that he's seen in, you know, since his presidency. They are by far much lower than his predecessors at this point. So I think this is the biggest test that Trump has definitely faced. If you believe these different reports, he's rattled. I mean, if he is going up to intel chiefs and requesting that they deny things, there's something seriously going on there. And there is, you know, you can campaign all you want, but governing's different, and governing's harder, and there are laws, and there are, you know, ways you're supposed to purport yourself as president of the United States. So I think it's a headache that is not going to go away. He wants this Russia thing to go away quickly. It just isn't. These things take time historically, and it's going to be something that keeps pounding away at him and has implications for the 2018 midterm elections.
Well, which is a really interesting way to go. First of all, we know from history, it's never the crime, and we don't know that a crime was committed here, but it's never that it's a crime. It's always a cover-up aspect. With Richard Nixon, it started as a petty little crime, but it's all the cover-up that led to his downfall. Bill Clinton, you know, it was supposed to be about Whitewater, and then an impeachment happens literally because of the Monica Lewinsky stuff. So here, too, it seems this president, because of Twitter and all the tools available to him, is out there much more so than any predecessor would have been. And of course, because his personality is the way it is, he can't just let things be. He's got to address them on a daily basis. But there are Democrats, leading Democrats like Adam Schiff, who are saying, hold off on this impeachment talk. What are you hearing in the work you do? I mean, listen, impeachment would tear this country apart. I don't know how much we get more divided than we already are. Do you get a sense that Democrats don't want to take things in that direction and want to watch things play out and hope one day he resigns and leaves things to Vice President Pence?
I think it's all premature, and I think that's what Schiff was trying to convey. Like, hey, let's actually follow the facts. And I think, you know, proceeding cautiously on this is wise. I mean, look, we're already a divided country. Trump came in a very divisive way, as far as, you know, split down the middle. The country couldn't be more divided. So if it appears that it's a rush to judgment, that it's not fair, that the facts aren't really there, you're not going to really get people behind you, right? I mean, people are they're not going to believe it. I think what Americans want to see is, you know, what are the facts? Where do they lead? And some of this testimony in front of Congress, getting to some of the facts, and, you know, the Michael Flynn and the subpoenas of him. I mean, I think as they show things, if they can really show that there's a preponderance of evidence, people might get behind it. But if there's any hint of, you know, a political witch hunt, as Trump is going to say it, has already said it is, and continue to say it is, people just aren't going to buy it, and it's going to cause more division.
One of the reasons I think you have Republicans like Leader Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Speaker, you know, not quite going after Trump is they've got an agenda they want to get through. I mean, they got their Supreme Court justice on, and I'm sure they hope for another one sooner than later. But what does this do politically to the Republican agenda? They want to talk tax reform. We have the president's budget that came out this week. Is everything just on hold, or will Congress find a way through the Republican side anyway to get back to work?
And that's an excellent point. I mean, so far, this has just completely derailed his agenda in Congress. I mean, we saw even Wall Street reacting to some of the revelations that were coming out of the New York Times and the Washington Post with regard to the Russians. You saw, you know, just stocks falling because they just believe that the tax plan that Trump promised is not going to happen, and how can it? So I think if American people are really pressuring their lawmakers back at home, these lawmakers are going to come back in 2018, face re-election, they're going to be very slow to backing Donald Trump's agenda right now. And it's just it's so far right now taking up all the oxygen in the room because there's one blockbuster story after another. It isn't one thing. It isn't, you know, him allowing Russians into the Oval Office. It isn't just him, you know, him leaking information, which he has since actually admitted, but said he didn't say the word Israel. It isn't just one thing. A series of events, and it's really, it's just stealing the show right now.
I'm also curious, you know, they do a lot of comparison to the positive relationship the president had as he's on this Middle East trip with Netanyahu, with Saudi leaders, and comparing that to basically saying, for example, when President Obama landed in Saudi Arabia, he wasn't even greeted by the king. No red carpets, no nothing. So clearly they're making the point, better relationship here. What I'm curious about is to get your perspective, which is when you listen to candidate Trump through the election, he couldn't have been more insulting to Arabs, to everybody. I mean, he tied them to 9/11. He said all the things that his supporters would want him to say. But how is it to all of these groups and Arabs groups that obviously are concerned about their image and how they're seen and they want to be respected? How do they put all that aside and welcome him with open arms and hugs and kisses when President Obama, who never really had a bad word to say about them, always wanted to have good relations, and yet they just didn't warm up to him?
Well, you know, there's one thing he is bringing over to the Saudis, and that is this, you know, $110 billion arms deal.
Yeah, but Obama did too. He just did it over time. It was about the same amount of money. It just didn't happen in one fell swoop.
Right. Well, it that is a good point. And if you also recall, you know, Trump was relentless against Obama and some of his gesturing with the king and you know, some of what he did on his trip. And now Trump's doing some of the same things. You know, the whole bowing and the hand on the orb. There's a lot of very questionable things right now. And, I can't quite get to the answer of why they're treating Obama and Donald Trump in different ways. But Donald Trump right now really needs it, to tell you that.
Yeah, he needs some pluses. I can't talk to you and not talk Springfield for a little bit. So, and as we chat right now, Springfield remains to be in sort of a quandary about things. So maybe they'll pass the budget. Maybe they won't. Maybe Democrats will do their own thing. We're going to see as things are playing out literally in real time. But I wanted to get your sense of Springfield in general. Bruce Rauner, governor, spending millions of dollars in ads. J.B. Pritzker, he's right up there with them spending that amount of money because he wants to take over Springfield. And yet we have no budgets, and the people most in need are the ones suffering. It looks like Democrats, even with their budget issues they're talking about in raising taxes, look like maybe they want to bite the bullet and proceed. Does that happen? Do Democrats ever, before this is over, wear the jacket without bringing Republicans along with them?
Well, that certainly it does not appear that Republicans are going to come along with them. It's that they just have been unable to come together. They've been, you know, as we've seen, there's been all these attempts and each side blaming the other side of pulling out, and all this squabbling, you know, even up to the last day of session. And you know, the other thing is that it's the Senate Democrats who keep coming forward and saying they can't take it anymore. They can't take the pressure from their constituents. They're willing to put, you know, put their votes on the line and vote for a tax increase because this. I mean, look what's happening every day. We're $15 billion behind in our bills now. All these different social service agencies are going under. But at the same time, you have Michael Madigan in the House who's looking toward the future and, you know, trying to relate to his members that, hey, if we end up doing this, we are going to end up taking the brunt of it, and Republicans are going to hold it over our heads. So what will end up happening? I mean, we have to do a little bit of predicting, but it just appears that they're headed toward another stopgap type of funding because of it, for a budget.
Well, let me ask you, if Democrats did
for higher ed and so forth.
Yeah, which are in trouble. If Democrats do decide we're going to pass this budget, we're going to do it, and we're just going to take the image hit, the odds are Governor Rauner vetoes it. Is that maybe the ultimate game plan? Speaker Madigan sitting back and just going, you know what? Let's do what we got to do. He's going to veto it anyway. And now we have a whole new set of ads saying that the governor has hung you out to dry.
Well, and, you know, that would be one way to approach it. And I think what Republicans really fear, and I think that's why we were seeing so much of the education funding, is that, you know, Rauner's people are trying to kill these bills. But they pass, and if they get to the Rauner's desk, he might end up signing them. And that is what happened, you know, in his first year in office when he signed the education bill after telling Republicans to vote against it. So they're voting against something that the governors. So I think there was a lot of panic by some of the Republicans in the Senate when this school funding bill that was Andy Menard's bill came through, because it actually was going to bring more money to a lot of these districts, and their people are hollering at home saying, wait, why did you vote against this? Well, the governor told us to vote against it because it didn't have some of the stuff that the governor wants in the bill. So there's a lot of different catch-22s going on simultaneously on different issues, and it's all going to come to a head, you know, at the election. But in the meantime, as you say, it's unbelievable. I mean, there is real suffering going on in the state. It has been going on for years, and no one's really stepping out and doing anything about it, you know, with exception of, at least originally, the Senate Democrat and Senate Republican leaders who attempted a grand bargain that ended up fizzling.
Which the governor supported, and then you're right. I mean, because unless you have Mike Madigan at the table, you're accomplishing nothing. Just one more strategy question, which is, let's say Democrats do this thing on their own, and let's say the governor signed it. I don't think he will, and I don't think you do, but you said you're right. It's a possibility he could. So now what's the ad that comes out of that? The Democrats say, we've got us out of this mess. We've taken care of you. And the governor gets to say, and so did I. We did what we needed to do. I mean, how do the Democrats play that as a loss for Rauner?
Well, they play it for we broke him. You know, what Madigan has been consistent in saying is the only time that the times that we've passed things in a bipartisan manner is when he set aside his agenda and we just took care of the budget. Then we can get to his agenda, but we want to do the budget, and the two don't mesh in Madigan's mind. They don't mesh. So he would take it as, yes, you know, we stood up to the governor. The governor wanted to affect, you know, Madigan has his spiel, middle-class voters, you know, middle-class family members will be hurt by his, you know, extreme agenda of harming unions and collective bargaining and so forth. And, of course, Rauner says, no, this is pro-business and, you know, pro-taxpayer and wants a property tax freeze and so forth. So, But that's what would come out of it. Madigan would say he broke Rauner.
And that we have a weak governor, right? And so that sets up to – either way, you're setting up 2018. Natasha Korecki, Illinois Playbook writer, and for Politico.com. You do such fantastic work. Thank you for spending time with me, and please join me again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care.
We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation.
And that music lets you know that it's time to talk a little bit about the arts. And often while I focus on different theater groups and companies around town, because I'm, you know, because they're so cool, I do want to spend time talking about an event that is coming up that you all can take part in and play around with and enjoy. And there's so many different things going on that I want to get right to it so that you can all check this out. It is going, it's called the Pivot Arts Festival from June 1st to June 11th. Plenty of time to have a good time all throughout Chicago's uptown Edgewater neighborhoods. You don't want to miss it. Julianne Ayer joins me now to speak for Pivot Arts Center and tell us all that is going on. Julianne, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
So just to kind of set the pace here, talk about what Pivot Arts does, because essentially you're really a home for innovation in so many different arts.
We are. We're unique in that we're a multidisciplinary organization. So we do music, theater, dance events, puppetry. There's a large parade event happening as part of the festival. And our focus is really on innovation in the performing arts.
And you are the director of that program. So
I
am. Right. You're part of taking all of this. So talk to me about the Pivot Arts Festival. This is the fifth year you've done it, so you've probably learned some lessons along the way. So I want to take you back in time.
Yeah.
What led to saying, let's do an arts festival? And as we get to talking about this, what this year's looks like, I'm sort of curious to know, what did it look like 5 years ago, and how has it grown?
Mm-hmm. Great questions. Yeah. So we started Pivot Arts back in 2012 just as an idea. And then the first festival was in 2013. It was 3 weeks long. It was amazing. We had a punk marching band, Mukapatsa. We had Manual Cinema, who's now completely taken off and tour internationally. There were events all throughout Edgewater, Uptown. We used a bank building up in Uptown that was a former vaudeville theater that had turned into a bank and that was now vacant. 3 weeks over time has now emerged into a 10-day festival. It's more streamlined. We felt that 3 weeks just sort of by the end felt like a marathon. So that was the biggest learning lesson, and to just make it 10 days felt like just a celebratory event. We have a festival pass, so people can see multiple events over 10 days. And I, of course, see everything in the festival, and I really recommend treating it as a festival and not just a one-off opportunity to see something. The festival really gives you a sense of the scope of work happening in Chicago that maybe is a little more unique, offbeat, but always highly entertaining.
And if I'm reading it right, as I've read through kind of what the plan is, we're going to talk about that, but it's not as though there's 15 things to do at one time and you need to go pick one. It looks as though what you really want to do is devote each day that you can between the 1st and the 11th, because every day offers something different, unique, and it's got its own magic happening to it. Fair enough?
Exactly. You know, and everybody's schedules are packed, but if you can even just fit in two events, three events, you get a sense of just the puppetry, dance, theater, there's wine tastings. It's really also just such a great community-building event. It happens in Edgewater and Uptown. Our goals are also to just add to the vitality of these neighborhoods, to bring people together. But people really come from all over Chicago, even the suburbs and some of our neighboring states, to see the festival. And it's a chance to meet people. There's wine tastings. There's a dinner at an Ethiopian restaurant that includes a performance.
Well, and I do, in fact, I want to walk through some of those dates. And,
yeah.
And by the way, you said wine tasting twice.
You
like wine.
Early in the day, apparently.
You like wine, I think. I'm all about the wine tasting, so you can say it three times for all I care, because I think it's great fun. So let's talk about it. And by the way, just for folks who are, you know, listen, people listen to this podcast at various times, and I know people will listen to it even after this event is over. So for one thing, if you're listening to it before or during this event, you can go to Pivot, which is P-I-V-O-T, pivotarts.org/events, and find out all about what we're about to talk to. But by the way,
yeah,
even if you're listening.
Also, you know, I just want to point out, we do have a dedicated festival page. So even better, if you go to pivotarts.org/festival, then you get the complete lineup of the festival. And it's really clear. It has different categories and beautiful photos. And you just get a sense of all the events that you could attend.
A better website, pivotarts.org/festival. All right, we're not going to talk about every day because I want people to go check it out themselves, but I do want to talk about some days. Let us start with kind of the kickoff on June 1st, because everything you just talked about is sort of all there on the first day in terms of drinks, dinner, theater, right? All those pieces show up on day one. Talk about that, and it begins with your favorite phrase, wine tasting.
You're giving me a bad reputation here.
No, I'm just kidding.
You know, we have so many great businesses in Edgewater, and so part of the festival, we work with the Chamber of Commerce. We really want to highlight some of these fantastic businesses. Independent Spirits is a small wine shop. They also have beer and spirits, obviously, but it's run by Scott, who knows a lot about wine. You walk in there, he walks you through all the things that you might be looking for and gives great advice. So we start there with a wine tasting. Then we move to a new bar in Edgewater called Income Tax, where you can get appetizers, complimentary appetizers as part of your ticket. That will be a cash bar.
Income Tax is kind of a scary name for a bar, isn't it?
I know, but you don't have to worry. The IRS is nowhere.
They probably don't go anywhere near there. That's the point.
And then we walk down the street, and there's an Ethiopian restaurant. If you've never had Ethiopian food, it's a great opportunity to try it. And as part of that dinner, you get to come with friends. You can also meet other people. It's limited. There's only 25 people that can come to this event. And as part of the dinner, there's also a performance by two former members of the Neo-Futurists, Rachel Klaff and Chloe Johnston, that involves food.
Which is good. And the show's called Table Life. And that whole thing for $35.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a total steal. Everything in that's the most expensive event in the festival. Most festival events are $10. There's free events, $15, $20 tickets. And then the festival pass is $35, three shows for $35. So we really just want to make it accessible and, you know, allow diverse people to be able to attend.
Right. Many things are family friendly, by the way. Some things are not. And obviously the wine tasting won't be for family. That's going to be for adults. But there's one particular event I want to ask you about that I'm curious about that isn't for family. I'll get to that in a second.
Uh-huh.
But first, I want to go to Saturday, June 3rd, because that's the Celebrate Community Parade. And that certainly is family friendly. And talk about what that great day is. With one of my favorite groups, by the way, Barrel of Monkeys. I love them. And I love Molly, who's part of that. They just do great stuff. But go ahead.
They do excellent stuff. And Barrel of Monkeys also, if you just go down the line, they are performing at the Uptown Underground on June 9th and 10th. So you can just go to a dedicated Barrel of Monkeys show. The Celebrate Community Parade is amazing. It's honestly one of the most fulfilling experiences I've had producing theater and performance events. The whole idea is to really bring our community together. Edgewater, Uptown are extremely diverse. There's a lot of immigrants. There's a lot of different folks who live up here. We wanted to just do a big event that celebrated these neighborhoods. It's free. As you said, there's lots of great performing arts groups that are coming that are doing, in addition to the parade, which has large-scale puppets, there's also workshops and performances for youth at the culminating event at the parade. Dream Big Performing Arts Workshop is going to be there. Circus Theme is going to be there with stilts and jugglers and unicycles. There's even a bicycle group coming this year, Pedalheads, that's going to do a workshop with kids on bike safety. So it's just a really fun, free family event. If you look on the website, you'll see the giant grandma puppet that we created a couple years ago. This year, we're redressing her, and she's going to be Lady Liberty. So
probably a good time to be thinking about that. I want to take you to June 9th because this is what's interesting. So Barrel of Monkeys, which I already said is one of my favorites. I love the players in that. And they're doing something called Monkeys Unplugged. It's on Friday, June 9th, 7:30 at the Uptown Underground up on Broadway. But here's the thing. Barrel of Monkeys is known for doing all this creative writing, teaching to kids, Chicago Public Schools, and all this kind of stuff. And yet that night, you better be an adult if you're going to show up. What are they doing?
You know, their work is so amazing. They do these great workshops during the day with Chicago Public Schools, creative writing workshops. And then in the evening, they have an ongoing show called That's Weird Grandma. it takes the writing of the kids and turns it into performances performed by their adult actors. It's hilarious. The imagination of children is, deep and absurd often. And this show is a special show that's going to be almost all musical adaptations of kids' writing. So it's mainly for adults. The venue is 21 and up because there's a bar. But children could attend as long as they have a legal guardian with them. But the show is really focused on kind of coming to this bar-like atmosphere and enjoying Barrel of Monkeys singing craziness written by children.
And so many other events that will be going on. Again, we want you to check it out. It will end, by the way, on Sunday, June 11th with ice cream. It's actually custard, but don't tell the kids that. And there'll be improv, and that alone is worth it. Now, I know you've got plenty of sponsors, and time won't permit us to go through them all, but at least I want to mention some of your key sponsors: the Alpha Wood Foundation, City of Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, the Illinois Arts Council, among many. So, and MacArthur Fund. So just great people supporting this. Once again, let everybody know where they can get tickets, so you'll give them the right website.
It is Pivot Arts. We're a pivot point for the arts. pivotarts.org/festival.
Check it out. June 1st through June 11th. Fun for the whole family. A little adult time in there as well. And we know there's wine tasting. Julianne Hare, the Pivot Arts Director, congratulations on what will be a phenomenal Pivot Arts Festival, to be sure. And I hope to check it out. And thank you so much for sharing that with our listeners. I'm hoping everybody will get their way there.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to seeing everyone at the festival.
Absolutely. Wishing you success. Thanks. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.